If you enjoy this podcast, please like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and visit our website at lifebetweenthevines.com.
One of their charters to protect that space, protect the heritage of this area, is if you get wineries in place, you get vineyards in place, then you've got something that'll keep it from being developed and lose that beauty. So they are doing a lot to help the wineries, all of us, bring up our game.
Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 556. This week we feature Bob Pruitt, owner and winemaker at Pruitt Farms, Livermore Valley. Having tasted several of the wines from Livermore Valley, I cannot overstate just how very good they are. Pruitt Farms sits right in the middle of Livermore, and yet it is a farm like any other, except Bob Pruitt makes excellent wine. The tasting room is intimate and welcoming, and having just had its informal opening day before our visit. Bob is the smiling face of the label, and I strongly suggest you check out these wines before the rest of the world discovers them. You can also hear Bob on our Vino Lingo segment, defining the term autolysis. Continuing our time here in Livermore, this has been a fun trip. Livermore is just a beautiful area and has an incredible amount of personality. I am here with Bob Pruitt, and Bob is the co-owner with his wife of Pruitt Farms, and you're the winemaker as well, correct?
Winemaker, sweeper, yes. Owner, funder, yeah, you got it.
We won't quote the more colorful parts of the job because, of course, we know wine is very... Fashionable,
yes.
Thank you for having me out here to the farm, and thanks for being on the show.
Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, me too. We're in a great little room. This is kind of like a little private tasting area just off of a main tasting area here.
It's our reserve room that we had a lot of fun doing and designing this way, kind of a dark academia or speakeasy feel to it.
You know, it does have a speak feel. Yeah, and the art on it too gives it a great bit of color on top of it. Once again, I had such a great education on the history of Livermore going back to the 1800s. And I've said this for our listeners too, you know, California wine goes back to the 1800s. There were lots of wineries here long before the Great Prohibition pretty much ruined everything. But this particular farm itself goes back to what year?
Yeah, it's fascinating. My wife had done a lot of the study to track back the history of this place. It was the house and the building that we're sitting in were built in 1881. The first grapes were planted here in 1880. So lots of rich history, and it's been fun. We've owned it for about 10 years, and the smart money said, well, you know, we've got this old farmhouse here, knock it down, start again. But talk about bad karma. Here you've got something that survived Prohibition and the earthquake and, you know, multiple world wars and like that. You couldn't do it. So
no.
Instead, we've... you know, spent a fortune on trying to do upgrades and really bring things back and respect the history of the property.
Well, and I'm going to talk about the history in just one second, but you had said yesterday was your first day open in the tasting room.
Yeah, this is a big weekend for us. So yesterday was our first normal scheduled tasting room. We've done a few open houses over the last year and a half. But yesterday was really lighting the fuse and doing it for real. So, oh my gosh, we're in deep now.
Yeah, no turning back.
No turning back.
How did it go?
Surprisingly well. It started out slow, and then we've have signs out on the road, which is a pretty good thoroughfare for folks. And of course, there's great friends that own the other wineries in this community, so they started sending us folks. In addition to people seeing the signs, and come mid afternoon, we were slammed.
Nice,
really busy. Great people. This room got used a lot, you know, and the all the work we've done recently to remodel the space worked out well as well.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I'm happy for you. As an entrepreneur myself, I always love to see people do their own thing, regardless of the challenge. Again, that's kind of like the American way, if there is such a thing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you jump off that cliff and go, oh, my God, what have I done?
Yes.
You light the fuse, right?
Yes. You learn the true meaning of 24/7.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's what a business owner does.
It's absolutely true.
It's a totally separate subject. I remember a friend of mine had gone on vacation, and she came back to work, and she goes, "Oh my God, I had to work 10 hours today."
Yeah. That's that. You know, the old joke is, if it's your business, yeah, you have completely flexible hours. You can work any 100 hours a week you want. It's easy.
That's good. That's very good. All right. Well, I want to go back to the property here. A winemaker said to me the other day about, you know, if I could go back in time to a certain place, to just in your head think about what this area looked like in the 1800s.
Oh yeah.
I mean, obviously, virtually nothing was here.
Yeah.
And you had these people who came here who were completely out of their minds, who wanted to turn this into something. And I say that as a joke, and truly all due respect, because this was about as uphill as you can possibly get.
Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah.
So the family that originally established this, the Schluters from Germany, they immigrated here. And interestingly, as I mentioned before, the first thing they planted were grapes. We don't know the nature of the grapes, but we know the first thing they planted in 1880 were the grapes. And then they built this structure and the house that we live in. And then this winery was at the time was for livestock. And, you know, of course, it wasn't a winery. I have no idea, again, where the grapes were going. Maybe one of the local wineries. Maybe Winty was doing it for them. Don't know. This space was at that point farm animals and just kind of what you'd expect of a big barn for 180 acre, 200 acre farm. They had it for about 50 years. The family had gone back and forth to Germany. We think they suffered some tough times with some diseases that came through. Just you'd see family members and then they were just gone, going back and doing the records.
Not unusual back then.
Yeah, exactly. And so they actually sold it to the Winties. And the Winties owned it for about 80 years. And I've met some of the Winties' oldest employees, and Hispanic people that are just awesome folk to be around.
Wine
growers in this case. And they talk about some of the parties that were held in this barn. And it's one of those, if these walls could talk, oh my God. You know, you can imagine wine growers, grape growers, farmers, people working really hard, and this was their chance to kind of cut loose. And the number of 50th birthday parties that occurred in here for very senior Winty employees. And so I only get bits and pieces of that. Like I said, I'm sure there's a lot of those secrets that they don't want to get out.
Well, you know, I often talk about ghosts in these wineries, and sometimes I take it seriously and sometimes I don't. But there is energy from the past, in my opinion, in places, and positive energy for sure, which for a farm is, in my mind, a good omen.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and the idea of being in a space where so much joy has occurred, and certainly difficulty and maybe to a degree tragedy, but it's all part of the color of life.
Well, there's your point is right that our old farmhouse had a root cellar. It's been filled in by, I don't know how long ago, but it's been filled in. But in the big redwood timbers crawling around down in there, definitely has that feel. And we've had guests that have stayed here that they were convinced that they had somebody very friendly come sit on their bed in the middle of the night. In a motherly kind of way, during the first couple years after we bought the place, and then no more after that. But people that are not, you know, ghosty types at all, that would talk about a presence, and not being scared at all, but just being comforted.
Well, and this is part of the great stories of winemakers. I mean, now that you're starting this particular point with the tasting room and everything, you're going to start accumulating these stories and what great memories they're going to be. As I've said to many winemakers, now you have the future looking back at you because you're making a mark with this land. It's a really strong responsibility on your shoulders.
Yeah. You know, and it's interesting you say it that way. And we've thought about it a lot, particularly as we bought this property. Both my wife and I grew up in farm kind of areas or ranch areas. And so, you know, plenty comfortable with having space around us and the work that goes with it and like that. But again, some of the history of the properties and the history of what goes on here in this region, you feel just particularly connected to. The emotional investment you get is just kind of second to none. You know, both of us have had, you know, big fancy houses and all the rest that, that comes with that. But this just really ties you to the history and the space better. And your point about what you're creating going forward is right on. Rambling on you a little bit, part of what's been fun that, that ties with that for me, Ray, is the awesome people that are in the community and the history that goes with it, whether they're like me that are fairly new to it or others that are, you know, generational. So you and I talked before, I came out of tech. What I really find different and enjoyable about this is how giving the people are with their wisdom and their time. And whether it's in aspects of winemaking or the business and, you know, here I am, you know, biting my nails about getting this started and launching the tasting room. Or just the subtleties of, you know, my pump broke and I'm racking and it's a critical time, and the number of people in the community that in a second will just, you know, be right here to help. It's a nice change from other parts of my life that I've experienced, and is really part of the joy of doing this.
There is that connection to helping people, and I think also educating people, especially watching somebody getting ready to do something really dumb, which has happened to me, and I'm sure it maybe happened to you. And somebody steps in and says, look, I can save you a little bit of pain. It not only makes you think more, but it warms your heart.
It absolutely does. Yeah. And that's, like I said, that's this community. And I'm sure it's kind of the nature of how the wine industry is for the most part.
Yes.
I mean, the people I know in this space that I would not want to be around are maybe two out of the 500 or more that I've met. And the rest are just fascinating folks. Like you said, passionate, engaging, supportive. It's been a lot of fun.
I would agree. And I think there's a lot of good karma, just even thinking
about
this.
Oh, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, we should talk more about the wine here. Let's, though, just really quickly go back to how long have you owned this property now?
We bought the property about 10 years ago. And at the time, I was, as I said, in tech, so I was gone 80% of the time. You know, if you're in that space, you're in Asia, you're in Europe, you're scattered around the United States, running factories with customers, et cetera. So I didn't get to be as engaged with the property as I would have liked until a couple, 3 years ago when I stepped out of that space. But yeah, we've had it for 10. I wouldn't say it was in a state of disrepair, but it certainly hadn't been given the kind of love that it deserved. So we've put a lot of, you know, our hearts into bringing the property up and really being true to its history.
Well, clearly you come in this room, both these rooms, you get that feeling of it is your heart and soul being put into it. So your intention was to grow grapes.
There was a vineyard here, and you know, like you, like a lot of folks that you interview, you know, you've been around wine for a long time, and just, you know, love the history, love what all goes with it. Of course, the drinking wine is nice, but what it the circles that go with that are what's really, really awesome. And I had been around wine, particularly being in Northern California forever, and, you know, Napa being close. We had property up in the Sacramento area. And as I said, on a farm, so there was always an airstrip. So I flew airplanes.
Oh, do you really?
And so, yeah. Yeah, and so
we'll have to talk about that.
Oh, airplanes are fun.
They are fun.
And so had an airstrip in the backyard. you know, you need that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And so the drive to go to Napa, you know, like for a date, was a long way, about 2.5-3 hours, because you're going down and right back up. But if you're an airplane, you can do that as the crow flies, so to speak. And at that time, there was still an airport in Calistoga. It was a glider port, but it wasn't officially a glider port. So powered aircraft, if you were very, very courteous to the glider pilots, could land in there. And so it was a great place for, you know, for having dates, to have a gal come over and say, yeah, we're going to drive over to the Napa Valley, but then instead,
yes,
jump in an airplane, boom, hop right into Calistoga.
So just a quick question. Where in Calistoga was that airstrip?
It was right up, you know, is Dr. Welkin's still there? The hot springs?
Yes,
yeah,
I believe
it's up at
it
that
is.
End.
Okay, just curious, kind of picturing it.
It was a cool deal.
Oh, yeah, I bet.
So anyway, pardon the tangent, but, you know, with that, you kind of get really excited about what all is going on in the wine regions around Northern California, well, the world. But so for us, we bought this property. At the time, there were 5 acres of Chardonnay, and the vineyard management was done by Winty, and they bought all the grapes. And as I said, I was traveling all over the world.
Yeah.
And then said, well, what the heck? It's not very often in life that you have a Chardonnay vineyard in your backyard. I should give this a go. You know, you're a tech guy. You think you're really smart, as a lot of tech guys do. And so I started getting into it and got incredibly humbled about just what all it takes. Like I said, the tech Silicon Valley mindset is, you know, we're changing the world. We can take on anything. We deal with the world's toughest problems, blah, blah, blah. You know, all that kind of self-absorbed mentality you get to. And then stepping over into this and trying to really understand the worlds of enough of, you know, botany and biology and chemistry and artistry and put all that together. Anyway, so the property had the grapes, and I just really had a great time with it. I mean, ultimately, we started doing more and more with the Chardonnay, and what I liked about the grape is I could do so many different things with it. You know, whether I did it in a Chablis style, you know, AKA just plain stainless, or, you know, big and rich California or Burgundian, I could just have a really interesting time using that grape for a lot of different things. So we make that as well as several reds, but the estate fruit is Chardonnay.
We're going to talk about the wines here, and I keep putting things off here, but I just want to cover this very quickly. How many acres did you purchase originally, and how many acres do you have here?
So there's a little over 22 acres on this piece of property. And what's unique is we are in town. We are smack in town.
Oh, nice.
We are an island in the city.
Interesting.
We originally looked at doing the property, moving out here for some horse property and just having some space, and which would have had you way out, you know, way out in the hills.
Sure.
But we found this in town, and say we even got our own bus stop. Our joke is, you know, if we real on our promotion, we could have, you know, ride the bus and drink with us. Right.
That's good. I would use that.
So anyway, yeah, that's the size of the property.
20 acres is a lot to deal with, especially when you're starting off semi-new. We were talking about what you're growing. We talked about the Chardonnay. What else are you growing here?
That's all we have.
And, oh, okay.
And Ray, I may have misled you a little bit.
I've been misled.
Yeah, misled. Well, you've probably had that once or twice. So there's we only grow now about seven tons of Chardonnay.
Okay.
That's all.
Are you buying grapes from elsewhere at all?
Yeah, several different places. We've bought grapes from Napa. We buy grapes from various places in the foothills. We buy, starting this year, we'll be buying some other grapes in the Livermore area.
What are you buying? What kind of grapes?
One of the areas up in the foothills is a Cabernet, nice old vines, 50-year-old vines, beautiful, rich, big fruit, extremely low yield, kind of what you'd expect with that sort of thing.
Yeah.
The owner of it, great guy. I'm doing a tangent on you here.
That's okay.
He was going to pull a lot of it out, and because the yields were so low. And a fellow I do this with, we said, no. Let us adopt a couple acres. Let's just adopt a couple acres. Your fruit's so nice. So we buy that. We buy Grenache. We buy Syrah. We buy Mourvèdre, Barbera, and a little bit of Malbec.
Where's the Barbera coming from, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, it's up in the Sierra foothills, in the Auburn-Lincoln area.
I was kind of wondering, yeah. Very cool.
It's some nice fruit. We've been really pleased with it.
There's some nice areas around here growing Barbera, but there's also a lot of little oddball areas where people are growing some interesting fruits, which is what I really enjoy.
We're spoiled with the nice weather here, right? You know, it's just, I have friends that make wine in various other parts of the country, and my joke with them, one of them, believe it or not, in Arizona, is if you can make something tolerable, you're a rock star. For me, if I can't make something good, I'm a dummy, right? Because we have such, you know, we're blessed with this nice weather and nice soil. And, you know, like we're talking right now, the fog is just burning off.
Yes, right.
As will be typical in the summer.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll get some nice hot peaks during the day that the grapes really like. And, the fog in, you know, at least 50% of the time in the evenings.
And I saw you had a little rain in the forecast today.
Oh, do we?
But I don't know whether that's pretty low, like 30%.
Oh, yeah, teaser.
You know, when I come here, I always look at the weather, which is kind of ironic because either it's going to be sunny and nice every day or it's going to be these occasional pockets. As I've mentioned several times, and our listeners know this, in the last three trips I've made since November of last year, for me, coming to a place I like to see sunshine in has been absolutely miserable. Great for you guys because of the rain, but there still seems to be a tad of residual every now and then of that rain coming down after that heavy rain season.
Yeah, yeah, we're still getting teased by a little bit of that.
Yeah,
we've had a just beautiful spring going on. You know, the highs, you look at it, it's boring. Let me see, the highs are all mid-70s, the lows are all low 50s. God, couldn't we have something to mix it up a little bit?
As a winemaker, do you work with a consultant at all?
You know, just started working with a consultant in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, what I'd done was worked with a lot of other winemakers. And again, the fact we're in Northern California, there's so many people that are exceptional in this space. I mean, just exceptional. And as I mentioned before, are incredibly giving with their wisdom and their time. And so, I kind of got to the point where I'd sort of tapped out as many favors as I thought I could use with that.
Sure, yeah.
The next level of where I was really trying to go to with my winemaking said I needed to bring in a consultant. And so I've actually got a terrific lady I work with. She's out of Healdsburg, an area you know well.
Sure.
And she's been very helpful to work with and just kind of tap into another knowledge base. So yes, I've been doing that. Actually, I came across her because the Tri-Valley Conservancy, I don't know if anybody's ever talked to you about that or not.
Yeah, we did talk about it yesterday.
Okay, so the Conservancy's working hard to help protect the space around here, and there's a lot of open space, and their concern is open space could very quickly get run over by development.
Yep.
One of their charters to protect that space, protect the heritage of this area, is if you get wineries in place, you get vineyards in place, then you've got something that'll keep it from being developed and lose that beauty. So they are doing a lot to help the wineries, all of us, bring up our game, whether it is in hospitality, whether it's in winemaking, a variety of other measures, whether it's even in business. So they're doing a lot to help in that. And for a good cause, it's not just a commercial cause, it's doing the right thing for the community.
Well, and a couple of people have mentioned that this area is sort of experiencing a renaissance because Napa's a wonderful place to visit, Sonoma's a wonderful place to visit, but it can be difficult in terms of your basic everyday tourism. And to come somewhere like this where, A, the traffic isn't killing you, B, you can go into downtown Livermore, man, that's a happening place.
It's fun. They've done a terrific job. You know, the planners have done it. I mean, and it goes back a long
sure.
ways,
yeah.
of course, when all the roots of that got established. But they've done a terrific job of that. And yes, it is a renaissance. And those of us who've been here all our lives, and as I mentioned before, spent time in Napa, it's kind of sad because these places you used to have that were very approachable, it's now a lot of those have kind of become wine Disneyland. You've used the term in some of your pieces about the real Napa and finding some of those places that are tucked away. And to your point, they are there and they are awesome, but they're hard to find.
Right.
And to your point, you got to go through a lot of mess to get there. So
you don't really want to have that happen.
God, no.
It needs to be protected just like the property needs to be protected.
Yes, absolutely. And so it is going through that kind of renaissance. There's some excellent winemakers that are here now. And there's been a proliferation of that going on as well.
Yeah, it's a typical growing pain thing to a degree, you know, that any area like this would go through. Have you gone through any formal education to be a winemaker, or has this been something you've learned out of your own passion for wine?
It's out of my own passion. My undergrad is mechanical engineering, and then...
Which isn't a bad thing being in this business.
Well, yeah, the discipline and how you approach it,
yeah.
I think, is real. And then after that, my education was in business. And then, no, it's read a lot, study a lot, talk to a lot of people, talk to them about what they did well, talk to them about what they screwed up. You know, I think you learn, I know I learn more by screwing up
right.
than frequently than by when things go right. If things go too right, you go, oh crap, what have I forgot?
Yeah.
And what's about to blow up on me?
Yeah. Yeah, but it's interesting because you don't really, yes, education is very important. Many winemakers I know have gone through Davis and numerous schools all over the place to learn, but I know several that have done the same thing have not had that solid education because in the end, there's a great deal of horse sense and intuitive feel. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned both you and your wife, you know, have growing up on farms, you get a little of that in your blood, don't you?
Yeah, absolutely do. I think, I know this starts to sound a little bit cliche, but sometimes not knowing what you don't know can allow you to do some things in a more interesting manner. And I don't mean getting out, just way out in the off the beaten path. But I mean, we all get stuck into certain habits and people think that, you know, a certain truth is it. And if you don't have a fresh set of eyes, you aren't necessarily going to question that.
Sure.
And so coming in with a fresh set of eyes can cause you to do some things better than what a lot of other people might be doing. It'll also cause you to make a lot of mistakes, too. But as I said, you get a chance to learn a lot.
It's kind of fun having the dog in the background. Just gives it that much more reality. This is a farm. Winemaking is farming.
It is.
Yeah.
It absolutely is.
Yeah. Now, are you doing your crush here or are you doing it elsewhere?
Oh, yeah. We're doing everything here.
Okay, cool. That's great.
Now, with this space, you know, since we don't have that much, this is absolutely a multi-purpose room. And so, the carpet rolls up and the barrels all move around and... You know, Mr. Forklift and I are great friends. I think a forklift is an important household tool.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Every boy should have one. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, it's all done here.
That's great. Now, normally, when I talk to winemakers who've been doing this for incredibly long periods of time, I have this particular question, but I'm sure it's going to apply to you as well because of your interest in the business and your time even here in the business. I don't know if you've done interviews, I'm sure you have in the past. And my favorite question is, what's the one question you've never been asked that you would like to be asked?
Oh, gosh. I'm stuck, right?
It's okay. Again, this is a really nice, accessible place. And again, you can come here by bus. But for our listeners who would like to come visit, is this by appointment? Can you just wander on in? How does that work?
So, great question. Thank you. That was the question I always hoped somebody would ask me. So, as you and I have discussed, we just opened yesterday our tasting room. So we're open Saturdays from 12 to 5. We've been doing quarterly open houses, and that's a by invitation, friends and friends of friends, which has been just an absolute ball. We've had a really terrific time doing that. And then appointments. So very limited opening at this point, putting a toe in the water, seeing what this feels like, because again, it can be pretty consuming, pretty darn fast, but that's it. And again, as I said, we're surrounded by cities, so there's a lot of folks that are right within walking distance and, you know, take the bus and drink with us as the other option as well.
That's nice. And nothing better than really walking to a winery. How great is that?
Oh, in particular, you're walking through the farm.
Yep.
Yeah. And you have to watch out. You don't, you know, the roosters don't chase you down and things like that.
I've met a couple roosters like that in my life.
Yeah. These are all pretty tame.
As I always say, for our listeners who'd like to learn about you specifically online, what is your website?
So www.pruittwine.com. And being a, you know, being a gray hair type, I've got some work to do to catch up on all the social front. So I do have Instagram, but it's not specific to the winery yet. And I don't have a Facebook page specific to the winery. Can you believe that?
Oh, my gosh.
I know. What a dinosaur. So those are my next things to get in place. But www.pruittwine.com and 5385 East Avenue here in Livermore.
Great. And if somebody want to call here to see what, if, for, how come.
They will get me, 925-525-3589.
Coolest thing in the world is you can talk to the winemaker owner.
Yeah, and we'll get right as into it as you want. And in fact, frequently I have to be reminded not to get too geeky for folks that want to really talk about what goes on with the winemaking.
It's hard not to get into long conversations. Bob, this has been totally entertaining being here with you today. Thank you very much for taking the time and being so welcoming. I appreciate it.
This is fun.
Learn more by visiting pruittwine.com. Thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast at lifebetweenthevines.com or sign up to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Life Between the Vines comes to you from Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Our host is Kay Pascoff. Our web geek is Dan Geisha. Original music by Ray Pfister. Copyright 2023.